Welcome to the View from the Penalty Box podcast with Cam Connor. Classic hockey stories from one of hockey's toughest enforcers.
Podcast number 35 with Cam Connor and my son Chris.
See, we've kept our word. We're on our episode number 35. Hasn't been too long of a break, and we have some interesting stories and topics to cover. Just wanted to thank everyone again for your reviews. We're getting more and more, and for everyone spreading the word on the podcast, we really appreciate it. Don't forget that you can follow Dad on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Cam Connor NHL, Instagram, viewfromthepenaltybox.com, the website. And we noticed a few orders for merchandise, some shirts and hats, so we really appreciate that. You're still waiting for when you can see a hockey game and see one of our shirts or something that says View from the Penalty Box. I don't know if it'll ever happen, or maybe it'll be you wearing the hat. But we really appreciate everyone who has been supporting the podcast. So I know one of the stories that you told on the last podcast was, I guess you'd call it a blind item, where you weren't even sure if you should tell the story. I guess you didn't tell the story, but you alluded to it. Yeah. And so we talked about it, and you're going to tell the story, but you are not going to tell names and
teams,
and cities. So anything like that. But it's still an interesting story. I heard it with everything cut off.
The story I was telling Chris was, this is, I will say, it's when I was in the minors. And there was rumors that the person that was our coach was doing drugs, doing cocaine. There was a rumor. Some of the players, you know, they had their reasons and they had told me. And I said, nah, no. Because especially cocaine, it just didn't happen in the NHL when I played there. So what happened one day is we were in the dressing room, going to have a practice, and in walked two thugs, just ready, because it has on the door, you know, that only the authorized personnel is allowed in there. And they came in, and they went into the trainer's room, and they grabbed the coach, and they took him out, escorted him out, and we were all looking at each other. So we pretty sure that this coach owed some drug money, and these thugs, they weren't shy about coming right into our dressing room and grabbing the coach and taking him out, escorting him out. He came back in later, so I don't know if he had money to give him or there was an agreement, but we were pretty sure that was the issue based upon what some of the guys said. They thought they heard the coach actually, you know, doing cocaine, making off his nose. So, I don't know, I'm trying not to reveal who it is. So, I went to a bar that summer in a different city, and this guy was in the bar, was our coach. We went to see him, and it was empty, so it was just the three of us, me and another hockey player, and this guy sitting there having a beer. And this man walked in and said to this coach, they wanted to see you come with me. So the guy got up and he walked to the men's room. And this guy was in there quite a long time, and I started getting worried. So I told my friend, just wait here, I got to go see what's going on here. And I walked in, and this thug had the coach by the throat on his tippy toes up against the wall. And you could tell this coach had been slapped around a bit by this guy. And as a hockey player, my whole life, I've been taught to, you know, it's a teammate. You help him. Even if your guy's wrong, you help your teammate. And that's been ingrained in my mind. So when I walked in there and I saw this thug with the coach up against the wall, I was just going to drift the guy real quick. And this coach said to me, Cam, this has nothing to do with you. Just leave here. Don't do anything. It's got nothing to do with you. So I had to take a deep breath and I left the room, but I was upset because I wanted to help this guy. But, you know, in hindsight, with some of these drug dealers or, you know, they're thugs, they got nothing to lose, they're punks. And if I would have done something, I'm pretty sure there would have been repercussions, price to pay that I probably didn't want to pay. So anyways, I do know that this particular individual got help, and he, to this day, he's not doing any drugs whatsoever. That was a low point in his life, and like I said, I almost got involved in it, thinking I would have paid a price, but I didn't, and happy ending.
You almost got involved by helping him, not into the drugs.
No, not me getting involved in the drugs, but by going in there and helping this fellow. That was my story. It's probably a little bit better if I said names and cities and so on. But, you know, I just can't betray this fella. He made a mistake. He paid a price for it. He came out the other side a wiser person, probably a lot poorer, but a wiser person. And he's got on with his life.
And I guess a few weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, one of your hockey teammates from Montreal, Guy Lafleur, was in the news with a pretty serious heart operation condition. So I know you wanted to say a few words about him.
Well, I haven't even read about it, but people that I know that follow hockey had told me that Guy Lafleur had a triple bypass surgery. And the story is that, you know, he went for a routine physical. Apparently, he has his helicopter pilot's license, which is scary. Because if you've ever driven in a car with Guy, I remember in Montreal, he had a light pole or a pole of some sort, street sign or something, went right through the windshield and out the back. And, you know, with Guy, everything was full force, man. Everything he did was go, 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 go. He, you know, on the ice, he went full tilt. Driving his vehicles, he went full tilt. I could not fathom me getting in it with him being the pilot. And I say this with love. You know, there's not too many better hockey players ever than Guy Lafleur. Not too many nicer fellas, sincere, down-to-earth individuals as Guy Lafleur. But Guy, I would not get in a helicopter with you, I promise you that. So apparently, you know, when he went for this routine checkup, that the doctor, I'm not sure if he x-rayed, but he noticed the problem and they looked into it. And I guess he had some problems with his with valves, and it was a little more serious than just putting stents in it. So I think he's everything is A-okay today. And he'll feel like a new man with those new valves in there for sure. So, Guy, all the best to you, buddy. I love you.
And then some of the episodes, you mentioned past players that you played with that you had to say, like, people should Google them. So, I guess a teammate that you had with the Houston Arrows recently passed away, and you wanted to share a few stories about him.
Well, my son was the one who, you know, enlightened me that Larry Hale, he was a defenseman for the Houston Arrows, had passed away. And right away, stories popped in my head about Larry. And Larry was, I think I was like 24, 23 when I played with Larry. And he must have been 36, 37. And a likable guy, except when he started drinking. And so when Larry started drinking, he would get loud and obnoxious, and you were in a bar and you'd see Larry and you'd just say, oh, somebody is going to straighten this guy out. And I know one time we had flown into Calgary right after Larry decided we got in, checked in the hotel. He met a buddy that he knew in Calgary and they went out and they went drinking. And I'm sure Larry had way too much. And he would shoot his mouth off and get himself in trouble. And this one time, he come in the dressing room the next day after you know, he went out with his buddy and he was all beat up. And we just started laughing because we knew his mouth got him in trouble. And we said, what happened? He wouldn't tell us for the longest time, but eventually he told us that him and his buddy were in a bar and he started mouthing off to people. And they followed him and his buddy outside and they beat him up. And so his buddy got away and ran down the street to a payphone. And he's phoning the police. Meanwhile, Larry's getting punched out. And they phoned the police station and the operator at the police end of it, they put him on hold for 3 minutes. And I started laughing. Poor old Larry's getting punched out for 3 minutes while his buddy's on hold. So that was one thing I remember about Larry. Another thing with Larry was we were in Indianapolis, Indiana. The game was over, so there was a guy named John Shella who has also passed away. And John was a pretty tough boy, and myself and Larry Hale, we decided to go to a certain restaurant bar that we were told they had good food. So we got in the cab, and I think it cost us like $30, you know, back in those days. It's probably $50 now. So we went there, we paid the cabbie, and it was raining that night. And we walk inside, and the other team is in there. Wow. Shella and I were old school. If the other team's in there, we're not hanging around. So we immediately went outside in the rain. We had called for a cab. And as we're in the rain waiting for the cab, then we see these couple guys breaking into a pickup truck right in front of us. And so we were just being goofs, like nothing too bad. But as they were breaking in, we kind of lowered our voice and, hey, what are you doing? And these guys kind of startled them and they kind of took off and ran around the corner. We didn't know they had about 8 friends around the corner. So these 8 to 10 guys come back. And now the 3 of us, you know, the hockey players are standing there. And these guys are saying, oh, you're tough guys, are you? And they started giving us a hard time. So, you know, we kind of, they formed a circle around us. And, like, you know, I was going to start swinging pretty soon. And Shella was going to start swinging. Larry Hale, he was not a fighter by any means. And so as these guys were closing in on us, the cab pulled up. And Larry, he just darted through these guys, broke through their arms, and jumped in the cab and locked the doors on us. And so now it's me and Shella going to fight these 8 to 10 guys. We were going to get chick kicked, but what are we going to do? And then anyways, these guys, they just give us a hard time and then they let us get into the cab. So I think about Larry about that one. But the other story about Larry, and I appreciate his honesty, is when I first got to Houston and we played Dave Semenko from the Oilers. It was his first game of pro hockey against us in Houston. So as it worked out, I had just scored a goal against the Oilers and this defenseman on their team two-handed me over the ankle. Well, I'm not taking that. His name was Buzniak, and I'd fought him before, and I beat him up quite a few times. But just like Paul Baxter, he was wanted to try me again and again and again. So I'd say, fine. So he come out. You know, I went after him, and I was beating him up in the middle of that fight. The captain for the Oilers, his name was Paul Schmier. But Paul was a pretty tough boy, and he's passed also. And so Paul suckered me. Now I'm fighting two guys at once. You know, nobody on my team, there was Terry Ruskowski, who was a pretty tough boy, and he had guts. He was on the ice, and Larry Hale was on the ice, and I don't remember who else. But nobody come to help me. And I'm not saying fight for me, just grab somebody. And then, you know, I could fight the second guy on my own. And then the linesman had to grab the first guy. So now Smear suckered me, and I'm mad. So I'm coming back and I'm starting to give it to him pretty good. And in the middle of that fight, Semenko suckered me. So now I'm fighting Semenko and Paul Schmier, two tough boys. And Semenko's got long arms and he's just throwing them, but he's missing me. He's just getting the outside of my face on beside each cheek. I got red marks because he hasn't landed, but he's coming close. And so, again, they got all my jerseys over my head and my equipment's off. And finally, the linesman grabs the second guy. So nobody helped me. I was on my own. So then I fought Semenko. And I know in Smek's book, he said that Camp Connor was more known for his stick work than his fists. So I went over and boom, boom, it was all over. He was causing problems. And I said to Smek, boom, boom, it was all over. And Smek said, that was the Ghost Rider. I didn't tell him that. He just wrote that in there. And I do. I got two photos, two or three action shots of me over top of Dave Semenko. So I'm not saying I could beat him today, and I've talked about this before, but at that particular time, I believe I bested him. And so where Larry Hale comes into this, so I got kicked out of the game after my third fight that shift. And I was a little peeved. I wasn't verbally going after anybody for not helping, but I would have been in there helping if I was on the ice, guaranteed I would have been. And so Larry Hale was the only guy that came up to me and he said, Cam, I apologize for not helping you out, he said, but I was scared. He said, you know what? That meant a lot to me. I've been scared before. I've been able to make myself, you know, get through that being scared, doing what I got to do, trying to talk myself into being a man. But I appreciated the fact that not everybody is a fighter. Larry wasn't a fighter. But the fact that he came up and he apologized for not being there to help me because he was scared. You know, that's honesty from the heart. And I actually admired him a lot more just because he did talk about it and he did apologize to me. So that made me feel better. So those are a few of Larry Hale's stories. And there's probably a lot more, but Larry was a easygoing guy, didn't have a mean streak on the ice. The only time he ever got himself into problems is when he started drinking, and that was too bad.
Do you know what happened to him after he retired?
You know, I don't. So often there's, you know, you have friends and then you lose contact. And I think he moved back to British Columbia. I don't know if he worked. I just don't know what Larry did. And if somebody knows Larry, I'd love to hear. Like, what did Larry do when his career was over? Because I really don't know.
Okay, so we have a couple questions sent in. So the first one was tweeted to you at Cam Connor NHL, and it's from Larry. And he wrote, when you played, did you ever see a player get jealous of another player because of how much money they're making?
I don't think anybody got jealous. You know, I'm sure behind at home, somebody was saying, well, let me back this up. We didn't know what anybody made back in those days, you know, because when we got paid every 2 weeks and at the hockey season, so the first day the puck was dropped for the first game, 2 weeks later, you got a paycheck. And then by the last game of the season, you had been paid your whole salary. And so when you got your paycheck in the dressing room, you would look at it, but you'd quickly, you know, look at it in private and stick it in your pocket. And nobody discussed what they made. There was, you know, a few guys like Anders Hedberg and Ulf Nilsson Swedes that at the time, they were making $650,000 a year, which was unheard of. But the Rangers wanted these two guys. They played for the Winnipeg Jets. And the Winnipeg Jets in the world hockey, their total payroll at the time in the 70s was $1.2 million. So they just didn't want the... And the Rangers had more money than any other team. And they just didn't want to get into a chance of losing them and just say $300,000 and the Jets would match it. So they went $650,000, and that was enough that, you know, the Jets couldn't pay the two of them $650,000 each. And then, you know, they have the team payroll, which is about the same level. They just didn't have that kind of money. So that's why everybody knew what they got paid, because that was in the paper. And so I can honestly say we didn't know, but maybe it would have been better, because then you could just realize how much money was out there. You just put a little more effort or you paid a price. But no, to answer your question, we were never really jealous. And these guys that were getting big bucks, we didn't even know, like a LaFleur or a Phil Esposito or some of these, and you're the captain of the team. You just made a few more bucks than anybody else. We didn't know, you know. So if I made 100, you know, maybe somebody who's really good was making 175 or 250. and maybe LaFleur was making $350. Like, nobody really knew back in those days, but you know what? More power to you, honest to God. That I was never jealous of anybody. I wish that I could have did better financially, no doubt about it, but, you know, it is what it is.
And I'm just looking in your phone for your Twitter question, and I came across something that somebody wrote that wrote, the WHA doesn't have a member of this particular club, but Cam Connor can safely lay claim to the title of the WHA's warrior poet. So it made me laugh. I don't even know what that refers to.
I don't know what a warrior poet is. I can't even speculate what he's referring to. So,
if you listen to the podcast and the account is Derek_G, let us know. Sounds like a compliment.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's a compliment, but I'm not sure where he's going with that.
So Craig on Twitter wrote, what player do you wish you kept in touch with after you retired?
Wow. You know, I just can't give you one name because there was, you know, on every team, there's 2, 3, 4, 5 guys that you get along with real well. There's a few that, you know, you didn't have much in common. But I wish I would be in touch with a lot more of the Montreal Canadiens. That was a special, special team. With the Rangers, there was a few guys that you could just tell that they took care of themselves on the ice. And they weren't so team-oriented. They were all really about themselves. Not all the players, but there were some of them. But when I talk about the Canadiens, like, that was a team. Every single guy worked hard. And when I scored my double overtime goal, you know what? Those guys were so happy for me. Every one of them, they made me, it was like they scored the goal. They were so excited for me because I worked hard. I kept my mouth shut. Even when the reporters were saying, Cam, you should be playing more. Like, what do you think? I kept my mouth shut. I never complained one time that year. And I got to believe those guys appreciated that. I just did my very best. And I would always encourage the other guys, if I saw something when I was in the stands, I would pass it on to them. And so I wish I would have probably stayed in touch with more of the Montreal Canadiens. Ray Jaoul, who's the president of the alumni, he's just awesome. He stays in contact. I get invited to their golf tournaments every year. So probably I would like to have stayed in touch with a lot more of the Montreal Canadiens. Kenny Dryden I got along with. Like Yvonne Cornwallier, Jacques Lemaire. Like we all, Pierre LaRouche, we all lived near each other. And so I spent more time with them just because we commuted and maybe went for a few beer together. But that's probably, you know, I would say probably the guys on that team. And in Edmonton, I kind of joke around. I always say, you know, when I play with Gretzky and Messier and Kevin Lowe at 18, I had no idea that they were going to have the kind of careers that all three of them did. I had no idea because, like I always say, had I known the kind of career they're going to have, I definitely would have had them over for supper more. So I don't, you know, it's a little phony for me to be reaching out and being their best friends right now. I'm not that guy. So I feel that if I would have got to know them when they were 18 and I had them over a lot and I hung around with them, then I would feel pretty good about trying to reach out to them and, you know, just befriending them again, just continue where we left off. So yeah, there's probably lots that I wish, but when we, just like with Wayne, when I run into him and I see him once or twice a year, you know, we remember each other. Obviously, I remember him, but he remembers me, and we sit and talk. And yeah, so it's nice to see everybody. It really is.
And the last question is an email view from thepenaltybox@gmail.com, and it's from Jerry. And I'll shorten it just to get to the main point, and it's not actually a hockey question, but he says, you mentioned on Twitter that you had a pet wolf and would talk about it on your podcast, but never did. What's the story with the wolf?
Well, I apologize if I said I would and I didn't. Basically, the story is when I lived in Houston, my first year there, I was single. I got married my second year. I don't know why wolves have always appealed to me. I just wanted to get a bond with a wild animal. It's, some people just shake their heads. That's just what I wanted to do. And I was reading in the Houston paper that there was a guy in Iowa that had been breeding these wolves with dogs for 40 years. And he came up with what he called the perfect hybrid. And he declared the pups that he had were 7/8 wolf. And I said, boy, would I ever love one. So I got a hold of this guy. I don't remember how, but I wrote to him. And I said, I'd like to purchase a dog, or blah, blah. So he asked me, well, what kind of owner and how would I treat? Anyways, I had to kind of pass the written test. But I love my animals and my pets, and they'd never have to worry about me as an owner. So whatever I said to him, whatever I wrote to him, that was enough. So he sent me this wolf pup. And if I remember, and I might not be right, I'm going to say it's about 2 months, 3 months old. And this dog, at 6 months old, could carry a soccer ball in its mouth. Like, it looked like a wolf too, my friends. But I wouldn't tell any of my neighbors, you know, that this was a 7/8 wolf. I said, it's a German Shepherd. Like, I'm not putting that fear in these people. A couple things that I learned. The dog was not scary as a puppy. You treat him just like you would a dog. But I had a husky as well. And if I was to do it again, I would just have me and the wolf. So I'd be the only one that it'd be bonding with. But because I had the husky, it kind of, that was its pack member, was a husky. So if I wanted the wolf to come, I had to call the husky. And then the wolf would come. And it turned out to be a pretty good dog. And so I really enjoyed it. And it grew up just like long legs. It looked just like a wolf, I'm telling you. You couldn't even see the dog part in it. It had good temperament. When I got married the second season, I'd be on the road. And it's different when you are raised with a dog as a puppy and you are with it every day versus my wife just kind of came into the picture and the dog's a year old. And so it was scary looking, I'm going to tell you that. And so when I go on the road and my wife's bringing groceries in, the dog, I'm sure, was just playing, but he put his mouth around her legs. And she got scared and she said, Cam, I can't. I'm nervous with that. So I gave the dog to our trainer. It was our general manager, and Jack Stanfield. And his wife, Heidi. And Heidi was kind of a free-spirited woman. And, you know, they brought the kids over to meet the dog. And the dog wasn't on its best behavior. And the kids were a little afraid of it. But they said, okay, we'll take it home. But can we bring the dog back then if we don't want it? I said, absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to find a good home. They said, you're not going to charge me. I said, I'm not charging you a penny. I wanted to find a good home. So they took it home and, you know, I'm waiting for that phone to ring after a week. And I hadn't seen Jack for a while. Then I saw him at the rink one day. And I said, so how's the dog working out? Well, he's not doing too bad. He ate our pet rabbit. And so I started laughing. You know, it's kind of funny. And so they said, you know, we keep him in our garage. And we got a nice big bed in there for him. And he's got lots of room. And we walk him every day. And so I probably saw him 6 months later, and I said, how's the dog doing? Well, he's doing real good. You know, Jack lived on a golf course, and he had their own golf cart. He said, well, the only problem is he pulled all the stuffing out of the seat from my golf cart. And so that kind of made me laugh, too. And so then our team folded, and I ran across somebody that knew Jack, and I said, can you ask him, you know, what happened to the wolf? And so apparently, Jack and his wife, Heidi, they got divorced, but I'm not sure which one of them kept the wolf. But they said that wolf turned out to be like the best pet they ever had. And so that made me feel good that he found a good home. And the wolf, he behaved himself. He didn't cause any lawsuits and fit into a family. So that was, in a nutshell, you know, I could go on and on about my wolf, but it was a great animal. I had a lot of fun with it, for sure.
And we'll end the podcast with one last story. This one's really interesting. It's kind of how you got to Flin Flon, but through Victoria and some illegal thing that was done, kind of. Yeah. You'll tell it.
Okay, well, basically, okay, I'm 17 years old, and I didn't follow hockey. If you follow my podcast, I've said it before. I just didn't follow hockey. I'd rather just play it, just like I didn't follow baseball and I didn't follow football. I just enjoyed playing those sports. So I'm playing, you know, for Manitoba Junior. I get a phone call at school. I think I was in grade 10. And my mom phoned me and she said, Cam, the coach for the Winnipeg Jets of the Western Hockey League wanted to know if you would be at the end of the season. Our team didn't or got eliminated from the playoffs, so I wasn't playing hockey. He said, he asked if you'd like to go up to Flin Flon and play some hockey up there. But they got two back-to-back games up there and a couple more, so play a total of 5 games with them at the end of the year. I said, absolutely. And I remember leaving school. I just ran all the way home. I was so excited to be brought up. And so they flew me into Flin Flon, and what I found out later is they probably asked 3 to 4 other hockey players before me, come on up and play in Flin Flon with us, and they all said no because they followed hockey. And what I didn't know is when you go to Flin Flon, when you go up there, it is rough hockey when you get in their rink. And these other guys were scared. They said, no way, I'm not going to Flin Flon. So I didn't know I was supposed to be scared. So I said, hell yeah. So I got up there and I remember, you know, I got in the day of the game and the coach said, well, you better go down and get a steak. I said, I got a steak? So I went down to the restaurant and I ordered a steak. I was saying, man, I'm going to like this. So anyways, I got out there and I played my normal game. I'm not trying to show off. I don't know how to play, but only aggressive. So I ran guys. I played just the way I always played. I didn't know they were tough guys. And it wasn't maybe 1 or 2 guys that challenged me. And it was not a problem. I took care of those guys. But they had a tough team. But, and, you know, when I look back on it, I have a program from back then. And there was 2 or 3 guys that made the National League. And they were tough boys. And they were on that team. But I don't know what happened. But we didn't fight. So anyways, I played my game up there. And then I got 4 points in 5 games, 4 assists. So I'm 18. I made the Winnipeg Junior Jets that year, and it's a new coach. And so the coach that brought me up at 17 was not the coach at 18. And so this, and I told the story, this is when, you know, they told me that, and another guy, it's going to be really rough hockey the first 2 weeks on the road, and only you and Blair are allowed to fight, and so I just sat on the bench, and he would use me to go out and just fight. And I will not play hockey. You let me play the game of hockey, give me a regular shift, things are going to happen. But if you think I'm going to go out there and just jump guys and do what you tell me to do, I'm not doing it. I would rather not. So after 2 weeks of just me being, and the other guy, the only guy's fighting, and being used as a goon, I quit. And the coach made fun of me, and he cut me up into paper. So they asked me, where do you not want to go? We got to trade you. I said, I don't want to go to Vancouver or Victoria because they had lousy teams and they didn't draw very well. So I didn't want to go there. Well, later on, I found out I got traded to Victoria. So meantime, before Victoria's training camp, I get a phone call from Patty Janelle, the coach of the Flin Flon Bombers. And he was Bobby Clark's and Gary Howitt's and McLarty's, Reggie Leach's coach. And he was a wonderful, tough coach that liked the tough play. So he phoned me up at home and he said, listen, I'm not supposed to be calling you, but when you were 17, you made an impression on me when you came up to Flin Flon. And he said, would you play for Flin Flon if I could get you? Because there's many guys that didn't want to go play hockey in Flin Flon, a mining town of 10,000 people. And you have to work in the mines during the day. But again, I said, absolutely, yeah, sure. And so he said, well, how about if you come to our training camp before Victoria? Now, it's illegal for you to come to our camp. So you'll have to come down on a fictitious name. So he made up a name. And he said, when you come, you register under this name. I said, all right. So I went to Flynn Fawn's training camp. And again, I only know how to play one way. And so I went to training camp, and I played aggressive, and I was just being myself, whatever it was. And so I did my week or seven, eight, 9 days up there, and then I went back, and I got sick. I remember I got sick. I had the flu, and then I was late going to Victoria's camp, but when I got better, I flew up there. The coach, first thing he did, you know, we had a scrimmage. So there was a guy, and I've talked about him many times, a guy named Kim Claxon. Kim loved to fight. He was a short, stocky, tough kid, man. Tough. He loved to fight. So he knew about me. I knew about him. We were on the same team in the scrimmage. I remember saying, okay, looks like we're not going to be scrapping. Well, of course, the coach blows the whistle. Kim, you go to the other side and change sweaters with so-and-so. So now I'm on the ice. Claxon's on the ice. Puck gets dumped into, he's a defenseman, into Claxon's corner. He carries it behind the net. He could easily moved it up to the winger, but he just kept it between his feet. So I'm charging in off the wing. I'm charging. He's still got the puck there. He's not moving it. So I ran him hard behind the net. And the two of us, we just knew we were supposed to fight. That's why he put Claxon on the other team. So we went at it. It was a good fight, both of us. It was a good fight. And so he found out I was tough. I found out he was tough. We went to a place called Powell River, which is just up the coast from Victoria. And we had to play these lumberjacks, and they were between 20 and 28. And we were all between like 16 and 19 or 20, 19, I think. So we took on this lumberjack team, and they beat the snot out of us. Like, they hammered us, and they chopped us, and they were trying to pick fights. And, you know, I didn't feel part of that team. And so I didn't feel like I had to fight everybody else's fight. Like I did when Flynn Flon, when they named me captain, you pushed one guy on my team around, you had to fight me. I mean, that's just the way I was. So there I didn't protect anybody, and nobody on their team tried to pick a fight with me. So I just played hockey, and I didn't get involved. And I need to get involved in order to play good hockey, but I didn't. The next day, because Claxon wasn't dressed, they dressed Claxon for the next game. Claxon said, I'm getting this guy. Sure enough, as soon as the pucks dropped, Clacker went after these tough guys that were playing the role against our guys. He kicked the piss out of these guys. Three, four of these guys in a row. And he didn't get kicked out of the game. When I don't remember why he wouldn't, but he didn't. And the rest of the game, those guys were like choir boys. So when they called me at the, you know, in the training camp, he said I'm the biggest disappointment that they had in training camp and that they're going to have to trade me. And there's a coach who was very good for New Westminster Bruins, and they had a good team, and they were a top team. They wanted me, and Flynn Flon Bombers wanted me. Where did I want to go? I said, I want to go to Flynn Flon. So I ended up in Flynn Flon, and after about a week or two of me being there, the coach asked me, he said, I got a chance to get this Kim Claxon from Victoria. Should I get him? Hell yes, get Claxon. Are you kidding me, man? I'd rather that guy be on my team than me play against him. So we got him, and between Claxon and I, we caused a lot of problems that year in the Western Hockey League. It couldn't have been too bad because I won Rookie of the Year for all of Western Hockey. But it was a pleasure playing with Kim, and I think Kim might be my first guy that I'm going to reach out to and have him on my podcast. I just love talking to Kim. He's the real deal back in those days, so I can't say enough of him. So,
what city is he based in now? Do you know?
Yeah, he lives in Pittsburgh. He played for the Penguins, and you know, his first game when he was playing with the Penguins, they took on the Bruins, and he fought Stan Jonathan, he fought Secord, he fought Winsink, he fought O'Reilly. Like, he's unbelievable, this guy. Like, I was sure glad he was on my team. So, anyways, I hope to get him on the podcast this year. Chris will talk about it, but we're looking at reaching out to some of the guys that I know, and I have their contact, and, you know, and Tom Lady would be another. And, you know, I know a lot of you people don't know my era, And I apologize that I can't maybe bring on guys, you know, from today's game. Although when I was in the Oilers dressing room, I actually talked to quite a few of those guys for quite a long time. And I kind of wish now that I didn't ask them if I could get them on my podcast. But next time they bring us into the dressing room, I'll make sure I get these guys to agree to come on the podcast.
Well, that's exciting news. And let us know who you want Dad to talk to. And until next time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam, and thank you very much.